Billy.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your spiders on my face of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
What do you want from me? Why don't you run from me? What are you wondering? What do you know? Why aren't you scared of me? Why do you care for me? When we all fall asleep, where do we go?
Come here.
Say it, spit it out. What is it exactly? Your pain is the amount cleaning you out. Am I satisfactory? Today I'm thinking about the things that are deadly. The way I'm drinking you down, like I wanna drown, like I wanna end me. Step on the glass, staple your tongue. Bury a friend, try to wake up. Cannibal class, killing the sun. Bury a friend, I wanna end me.
So we're gonna do an ASMR episode about Billie Eilish.
Young Invisalign.
Oh, get your teeth right. First off, I remember when pop stars had bad teeth.
Really?
Kinda.
Who?
I don't know.
Name names.
I'm just saying.
I remember when Gwen had braces.
That's true, but I just feel like in the 70s or 80s, you know, it's just like... Sometimes you had like one tooth that was like maybe
British pop stars just don't count.
That's true. Fair point. Fair point. Also, low key thought Billie Eilish was British for the first 6 months.
A lot of people do.
Eilish is kind of like, oh, it's like maybe she's Welsh.
I think she has some real Irish blood. Their last name is O'Connell.
Yes. Do you think that she's a Welsh music industry plant?
Yeah, the Welsh music industry is thriving.
Yeah, that's true. If anybody here works for Universal Wales, get at me and let me know if you are behind Billie Eilish. So we are clearly talking about Billie Eilish. The streets have been demanding it.
We're late. Late pass.
First of all, Joe Coscarelli was not late.
Right.
Popcast waited and bided its time so that it could have an informed, thoroughgoing take.
Which I would say we did as a news organization with Billie Eilish more generally.
Yes. Which I'm kind of grateful, to be frank.
I think so, too. She wasn't ready.
No, and that is a thing that I would venture to say that the internet ecosystem is not aware of, which is that someone can be out and public and popping, but not ready. But Billie Eilish has actually been sort of somehow dodged most of the worst bullets that would come with being not ready, but still being public at a young age. Billie Eilish is still only 17 years old. Her first full-length album, which is called When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? All caps, came out 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, number one album in the country. But she's been putting out songs for at least three and a half years, mm-hmm. First on SoundCloud, and then she got signed to whose imprint on Interscope?
This kid, Justin, who was a marketer. He's like a protege of John Janik, who is the head of Interscope.
Great.
And it's his imprint, Dark Room.
So they have been slow growing her for the last 2 or 3 years. People who listen to podcasts religiously may know that I have been of decidedly mixed opinion on prior Billie Eilish creative output and also prior Billie Eilish merchandise. You know, it was interesting. Later, I should say later in the podcast, we're going to get a phone call from Megan Garvey. Megan wrote a Fader cover story on Billie, and there is a part of that story is there's like a merch meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, words on sleeves are played out, to which I have to say, I agree. So hopefully I will not see any more words on sleeves on Billie Eilish merch.
Only Ariana merch now.
No comment. I was not at Coachella, therefore it didn't happen. So let's talk a little bit about how we arrived at this Billie Eilish moment, which does feel, even though it's that strange blend of, wow, it really happened in its own time, mixed with a, damn, these motherfuckers got it right.
Yeah, I mean, but that's an amazing thing, right? Yeah. Like, when the music industry works, it's a thing to behold.
Yes. So, talk about Billie in 2015 to Billie now.
Billie Eilish, child of Los Angeles.
Highland Park, stand up.
Right.
Do you think she went to Mount Analog ever? That record store?
That's a good question.
Shouts to Matt.
I don't think she knows what a record store is.
That's a fair point. Shouts to Matt Analog, which basically only sells like 17 CD box sets of French death metal.
Yeah, she definitely has never seen a CD.
No, but low key, she might really enjoy 17 CDs of French death metal. So I don't know, Billy, if you're listening to this, maybe go check out
Matt
Analog.
Get some merch ideas at least.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So Billy is the daughter of two working actors. Her father and mother, Maggie and Patrick, they were sort of theater people. Maggie was in the Groundlings, which is, I guess, a famous improv troupe, I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
She's in an episode of Curb.
Is that right?
Which is funny. Oh. Yeah.
Is that in your piece?
No, I didn't have
the space. We should also say Joe wrote an Arts and Leisure profile on Billy a few weeks ago and also did a Diary of a Song, which we're going to get into shortly, about Bury a Friend, which is what we opened it. Wow, really doing late back announcing. But that's okay. That's okay, because this is a podcast. This is not another kind of podcast. So we'll announce whenever we want.
Loose.
That's right.
Casual. That's how people talk.
Is there another way?
Billy is the youngest of two children, her brother, Phineas. He's her main collaborator. He produces all of her music.
He's about like 4 years older, it seems.
Yeah, he's 21 currently. He was the musician in the family. This is, we can get into the family dynamic a little bit more in a bit. It's very specific, very intense, but also pretty amazing, I think, to have witnessed up close. This is a extremely tight-knit four-person system, I would say, in addition to being a loving family. Phineas was making music. He was in a band. Interestingly, this is for the real podcast heads.
Let's go in, yeah.
The O'Connell family knows Phoebe Bridgers and her mom from the local kid battle of the band scene in Los Angeles.
What?
So Phineas used to play Battle of the Bands alongside Phoebe.
What was his band called?
I'm blanking on the name, but we're going to pause.
We'll slap it in later.
All right, we'll slap it in later.
We'll slap it in later. This is the opposite of we'll do it live.
Right. There is,
we'll do it taped.
I will say, if you haven't seen the Diary of a Song video, go to YouTube. There is a clip of Phineas playing in his band, which I thought was pretty funny. So he was the musician. They were homeschooled. They were both dancers. Billy was very into dance, very into fashion, into creating. But Phineas was sort of the musician in the family. And he was writing songs from a young age, playing alongside Phoebe Bridgers as a teenager. Maggie, the mom, said to me, she was like, well, if I could say anything about our family and Phoebe's family, it's that, like, all the kids are making the music that they want to be making. And I'm like, wow, that's like, you know.
Is that a drag?
No, I think it was like.
Is that shade?
I think it was they're only themselves, you know, these millennial children. These people
are we
born
now at
in
the point
2000s.
Where are we now at the point where everybody is so sincere that things that are meant shady are actually just read as sincere?
Yes.
As opposed to my generation or your generation where things that are sincere are read as shady?
Yes. This is an earnest crew, I'll say that, as a family. Phineas at one point writes a song called Ocean Eyes. Mm-hmm. And actually Billy's dance teacher had said that they would choreograph a modern dance set to
as
this
you
song,
do
as you do when you're homeschooled in Highland Park.
So you think you can dance.
Billy, also a singer, you know, had played as a child as well. The mom taught them a songwriting class together, which she sort of, you know, gave everyone the basic tools, learned some chords, learned some Beatles songs, learned how to write a hook. And Billy, 13.
Which explains a lot. Just FYI.
Sure.
We're going to arrive at my take.
All right.
We're going to arrive. We're getting there.
It's a warm up. Billy sings Ocean Eyes for her brother.
Shall we slap a little Ocean Eyes?
Let's hear it.
So this is Ocean Eyes. I assume it's like maybe a slightly cleaned up version, the one that ends
it's
up on
It's actually
Spotify.
Not.
It's
that's
just the one?
That's the take from the house from 13 years old. That's the one that ended up on the radio.
All right. So listen to Ocean Eyes. And then if you are so inclined, you should also go to YouTube and watch the video for Ocean Eyes where you really get Billie Eilish eyes.
I've been watching you for some time. Can't stop staring at those ocean eyes. Burning cities and napalm skies. 15 flares inside those ocean eyes. Your ocean. I'm
Bandcamp. Pedro just Googled. The band name is The Slightlies. Maybe they have a Bandcamp.
I think they still do have a Bandcamp. I listened to some of it on Bandcamp.
Yo, donate to the Bandcamp of The Slightlies, please. Yeah,
I don't think Phineas needs your money
anymore. That's all right. Just put $3 on it, man. Sure. Just like
for the other guys. For the other guys who don't have a pop star sister.
R.I.P. Just crossing myself here for the other guys in The Slightlies.
So this song became a thing on SoundCloud, as songs did a couple years ago.
Yeah.
People started remixing it, which was really interesting, and not via any official channels, with like the stems of the song. Like they just took Phineas's whole production and then added a beat on top of it.
Sure.
A great era of SoundCloud remixes.
Good era. And also like people are telling you something. Sometimes you have to listen to what the universe is telling you.
This is a really sync-friendly song. Yeah. This is proto Spotify core. It's beautiful. It's very straightforward. It's catchy. It's loving. It's wistful. You know, it's like, it's just a...
It's kind of boring.
Yeah, it's just a straight-ahead song.
It really is like low-key. It really is Spotify. I mean, you kind of can't call it Spotify core because it exists on SoundCloud, but it really... There are so many touchstones from that song and like the subsequent couple songs.
And of a real era. Yeah. And I think
it's like, I know where all this came from.
Totally. Now. And one of the interesting things to my eyes that happened with Billie Eilish is that she moved away from that into something like something more extreme.
Well, she got a good wardrobe. So, you know, that's
on top of everything else. Yeah. So that's the song that got her signed, basically. And from there, it's just been this sort of methodical march to the top of the charts. I mean, they've done everything right. They're like teaching music business classes about Billie Eilish right now. Every time I talk to a label person in the last 6 months, they're like, oh, Billie Eilish, like, you know, they're salivating. This is like, this is the biggest thing that could possibly happen. You only get to create a pop star once, twice a year, maybe?
Yeah.
If that.
And also, this is where, you know, again, not to be the old person, but like sometimes you're just like, wow, labels really just used to sign people and then develop them and like try things out and maybe things work or maybe things don't. And you sit in some kind of stasis for a year or 2 years until you kind of like clicked in and then you get freed, unleashed into the world. That is not a thing anymore. The nature of virality is success first, then everything follows immediately from that. And so to have someone like Billie still basically functioning in the old fashioned way, compounded with they didn't just jam her in the studio with a bunch of terrible producers. A bunch of people who work for other people who do, you know, even whether it's a good person like a Max Martin or a Ricky Reed or whatever, it doesn't matter. They didn't cram it in some other place.
And
they let it.
You know, they thought about it. They put her in some sessions, beginning of her career. She's a young teenager, and she's like, I don't like this. What she does is she records music at home with her older brother. And they're the only people credited on the album. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she put out an EP called Don't Smile at Me a couple years ago, you know, and that had a slow climb, too. I think something that people repeated back to me a lot in my reporting around this, and which I had noticed myself, is I think Billie is really lucky because no piece of content got bigger than she was along the way.
That is accurate.
There was no song, there's no viral meme, there's no like sort of moment. Like
nothing that she, there was nothing that she had to rise to.
Yes. It was always
account for.
Think of Lorde, right? Think of Lorde's career without Royals. Royals screwed up the entire expectation of what kind of artist Lorde
should
be.
Yeah, messed the arc up.
Yeah, it messed up the arc. Like, and you saw her sort of recalibrate on the second album and be probably the size and the type of artist she was always meant to be. But because of Royals, the second album gets framed as a flop of some sort. You know what I mean? Regardless of Grammy nomination and whatever. But it sort of throws
Justin
everything
Lorde,
out of
whack.
Who will
be with us in pop music for 30 years.
Right, as she should be.
Absolutely. I look forward to seeing Lorde perform at my funeral.
And I think Billie Eilish was lucky to not have a Royals up to this point in her career. I think she built a real groundswell of grassroots supporters. I went to the shows. I went to the meet and greets. This is like you can say industry plan as much as you want, but when you see teen girls waiting in line from 3 o'clock in the morning before any adult knows who this person is, like you can't really fake that. And it reminds me of what I saw following around Halsey at the same point in her career. Say what you will about Halsey and the path that she's taken. She's extremely popular. It was always going to happen this way because
BTS was very kind enough to let Halsey appear on her most recent album. So she's still working with people more famous than she is.
Yeah, and look, and Halsey has two number one hits. So shout out to her. But I just remember back to before she released her debut EP and album, like there were kids. The first time I ever saw her, South by Southwest, in a bar with 15 industry people and nobody else, there were kids outside with their phones filming through the window who could not get in and see her. I had literally never heard of this person in my life. You know what I mean? There's like, this was a real fan base that was growing exponentially over the years. And I think they've been unleashed on the world with Billie coming to her debut album.
Should we listen just to something off of Don't Smile at Me?
Yeah, play Bellyache, because that's sort of like the first time she gets a little dark.
Yeah, this is Bellyache from Don't Smile at Me from 2017. So subsequent to Don't Smile at Me, there is this kind of slow drip. There's a slow drip of songs.
They put out a lot of songs.
Yeah, I think when I was going back and listening, I was really surprised because I had missed some songs. And they weren't songs that were tethered to projects. They weren't songs that were tethered really to anything. It was just sort of, it's basically how we always are saying that people should release music. Which is, if you are done with something and you like it, just put it out. And maybe there'll be an album on the back end of it, or maybe there won't.
And that's what they did.
But just keep putting it out.
And they were sort of feeding the loyalists. They were feeding this growing fan base. They're tending to this garden, right? And the thing that they would see from, you know, having spoken to her whole business team is, like, every time they would put out a new piece of content, and usually these came with, like, elaborate videos, even if they were just one-off songs, people would go back and they would listen to everything else.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So instead of it being one viral thing and then what's next, people were exploring who is this artist, what is this world she's creating. And that's how I think you build really engaged listeners.
Okay, so I want to play one of the kind of Lucys, and then I want to ask a question that sort of still gnaws at me. So I want to play Come Out and Play.
Come out and play. Look up out of your window. See snow. Won't let it in though. Leave home and feel the window. Cause it's colder here inside. In silence. You don't have to keep it quiet. Shy to say, but I hope
Okay, so the reason I wanted to listen to that song is it's pretty basic.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that in both senses of the word. I mean that descriptively and like quasi-pejoratively. It is also one of my favorite Billie Eilish songs, but it's very basic. And it got me thinking a lot about why Billie, not necessarily why she's popular, but trying to distill down exactly what it is she does well. And I think I landed on kind of two things. There are aesthetic choices, and by aesthetics, I mean both visual presentation, outfits, mood of recordings, videos, etc. But the more I listen to Billie Eilish, my deeper takeaways from a musical perspective is that she's actually very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
A name that kept popping in my head throughout the new album and also on a couple of these older songs, and you're going to laugh, but was Tony Bennett.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is the most fire take. I'm really glad you didn't prep me for this one. I wish we had a reaction shot of my face. I was like, is he going to say Sarah Bareilles?
Yeah. Billie Eilish could never touch the queen.
I knew that was
the
coming.
The queen, too. Sarah Bareilles. No, I really was thinking a lot about Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett, who has been alive 6 Billie Eilishes.
Yeah, not more than 6 Billie. Tony Bennett, who is Billie Eilish's great, 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 great grandfather. I was thinking a lot about classic. Oh, shouts. Kurt Loder just followed me on Twitter.
Nice.
Good timing, Kurt. Thanks. Appreciate that.
You heard that take from the heavens.
That take is currently, it is reverberating around all the rock critics of all time. I was thinking about classic lounge singing. I was thinking about the song structure, sort of pre and into Brill Building and kind of these incredibly classic, crisp, clean forms. A lot of Billie Eilish music passes for not very structured. And this, we can talk about Diary of a Song now. It passes for not very structured. Mm-hmm. But deep down, I do believe that it is incredibly reliant on structure. And almost I would say to a fault, in such a way that one of the things I think that was an obstacle to me getting into her was I felt like it was simple.
But I think you've hit on something important, which is like from a non-critical lens, you see why this translates to such success, because it's simple songs, mm-hmm. familiar sounds, dressed up, super cool.
Yeah.
And I mean that from Phineas's productions. Mm-hmm. Like there's a ton of little tricks that he does on album.
A lot of,
that keeps you engaged, right? A lot of little it's texture, it's sound effects. Right. It's sound effects. That's the Diary of a Song thing for Bury a Friend. Yeah. You know, this is a song that features a staple gun, broken glass, a shovel, an easy bake oven sound effect, mm-hmm. this dental drill that Billie recorded on her voice memos. And they sprinkle this all in.
Do you think the Invisalign stuff is Spawn?
You know, I've had this conversation a lot. Shout out to Zara. I know she's digging into this right now, Invisalign is Spawn.
All right, hopefully by the time this comes out, there will be some public clarity about whether Invisalign is Spawn or not.
Yeah. And so it's the songs. The songs are dressed up cool. Mm-hmm. You know, the bass breaks. Mm-hmm. There's some astroworlding going on. Mm-hmm. You know, there's little snippets of songs in other songs. I like that. Now the shorthand.
Yes, what Travis
beat
Scott
change.
Has bequeathed upon us. Our beat change, aka incomplete.
Right.
Well, I really sound like a mean dad right
if
now.
If you have the
Sorry,
full Drake
Travis.
Verses from Sicko Mode, you know, send it to podcast.
It's either the full Drake speech from the Grammys or the full Drake verse. From Sicko Mode, anything, podcast.com.
And then it's the Instagram, right? Yeah. It's her videos. It's her, you know, she's presenting as a pretty in-your-face, intense character. You mm-hmm. mentioned the spiders on the face. Mm-hmm. You know, you
genuinely well-dressed, like genuinely interesting. All her visual reference points come from hip-hop.
She's basically Lorde, Selena Gomez, Lana Del Rey, adopted by Tyler, the Creator, and Bloody Osiris. You know what I mean?
Tony
that's like
Bennett.
Tony Bennett. Right? Tony Bennett's the godfather. But people want pop songs.
Yeah.
And they want them to be cooler than your average pop.
But are these songs cooler?
That's your job.
Yes. I don't think, for the most part, prior to this album, that the songs are cooler. I don't think so. And I think that's been a consistent struggle for me with Billie Eilish, which is understanding the kind of rabid intensity of why people are into the kind of package of Billie Eilish, but not necessarily putting together these songs don't solve a problem that hasn't already been solved.
Totally. And I think what the album does more successfully mm-hmm. than her music up to this point is dress up some pretty straightforward top 40 hits
yes.
in something that speaks more to a generation that listens to rap music, mm-hmm. that, you know, wants to piss off their parents sometimes still, you know. So you have a song like, and maybe we should listen to a little of this, you have yep. a very straight ahead song like When the Party's Over,
just
right?
what I was going to recommend.
It's a ballad, it's a nice ballad, it's like some of her other ballads that mm-hmm. had come first, but it's a little weirder. And then you get the video, and in the video she's drinking this black liquid and mm-hmm. then it's pouring from her eye sockets, and
of course you mentioned Tyler the Creator in your piece.
It's a direct reference.
Yeah, it's yeah. a direct reference to Tyler, and no one has yet done for pop what Tyler did for hip hop. And Billie Eilish may well be that turning point.
And I think this goes back to something you and I worked on last year, which is mm-hmm. this idea of like the dying pop star. Mm-hmm. And when we say pop star, we mean white pop star.
Right.
Billie Eilish has effectively been able to make music that doesn't feel like the staid sort of Katy Perry top 40.
Right. It sounds like Katy Perry on Perks.
Exactly. And it can speak to a generation yeah. who SoundCloud rap is natural to them. It wasn't yes. some weird mutation of hip hop. It's mm-hmm. just that's the rap music they know.
Right.
I mean, this is someone who's friends with Denzel Curry and yes. tours with him. You yes. know, this is mm-hmm. like, and she's been
and
able.
And XXXTentacion. Like, this is some, you know. That,
exactly.
That's, and again.
She's a child of that as well.
And this is, I get emails at podcast email address talking about, you know, sometimes it's a challenge when we talk about stars of that generation and da da da. I think it is important to contextualize and say for the average 16, 18, 20-year-old, they're not comparing that generation of stars against whatever generation you or I or may have grown up with. That's Jay-Z.
You're right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. that's 50 Cent. That's Outkast.
And I think the other thing she's been successful at is integrating hip-hop aesthetics, both mm-hmm. musically and visually, without trying to be a rapper.
Thank God.
If she were this little white girl doing some of these things and then also trying to rap, she would have gotten squashed.
Unless she was Danielle Bergoli.
Well, yeah. look, she's also, I feel like her and Bad Baby are not yeah. that dissimilar, yeah. you know? And like, I think they've hung out, if I'm not mistaken.
I love it.
At least on the internet.
Yeah. How about this? Let's listen to When the Party's Over, and then let's have Megan call in, and then we'll have a whole talk about the Eilish household.
Great.
Quiet, I'm coming home, and I'm on my own. And I could lie, say I like it like that, like it like that. Yeah, I could lie, say I like it like that, like it like that. It's better sometimes. Once we've both said our goodbyes, let's just let it go. Let me let you go. Quiet when I'm coming home and I'm my home. I could lie, say I like it like that, like it like that. I could lie, say I like it like that, like it like
that. Hello?
Megan Garvey, what's up?
What's going on?
How are you?
I'm very well.
So, Joe is here.
Hey, Megan.
What's up, Joe?
How you doing?
I'm good.
You ready to get deep? You ready to? We just did about a hot 20 minutes debating.
A hot 20
debating the Billie Eilish aesthetic. So we're going to pick up the conversation with you. We're going to talk a little bit about the home life, and because you guys both got to go to the house and kind of see it in action and, like, you know, see what her bedroom's like and kind of all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll circle back to what you and I were talking about last night, which is kind of like that gap between presentation and actuality that she's sort of like toying with.
Okay, cool.
So if you haven't figured it out, Megan Garvey's on the phone calling in from Chicago. Megan wrote about Billy for the cover of The Fader, also writes for Pitchfork and Billboard, and is at work. Can I say this about your book?
Sure, go ahead.
Is at work on a book about Bloghouse. Give us a good emblematic Bloghouse song, and we will play 5 seconds of it right now just to kind of get
Oh my God. Play Stress by Justice.
Ooh.
And terrify all of the podcast listeners.
Is that the Bloghouse anthem?
It's one of them.
Just, man, I gotta be honest. Justice is not it. I never banged with it.
Save it for the Bloghouse podcast.
All right, yeah, we'll bring it back. You can try to talk me into it at a later date. So Megan's here, Joe's here. We have two people who have been in the Eilish household. Eilish is not her last name.
No,
to be fair,
Eilish is one of her middle
one
names.
One of her middle
Megan,
names.
Megan, what's her other one?
One of her many, many, and the other one's Pirate.
There you
How
go.
Whimsical.
Pirate.
Hey, matey. So, okay, Megan, talk us through the household.
Okay, so little bungalow. I'm walking in, like, a cynical person that I am. I kind of expect everyone in this position to be, like, secretly rich.
True.
But, like, the first
like
thing
us.
You see when you...
Like us, like all podcast hosts, super rich. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you walk into their home, and the first thing you see is a bed out in the living room. And I kind of assumed that was just like a lounging area or whatever. No, that's where her parents sleep, because there's two bedrooms in the house, and one is for Billy and one is the recording studio that used to be her brother Phineas's room, and her parents sleep in the living room.
Yeah, I mean, this is unbelievable. Not only is a house two bedrooms, it is a one bathroom.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
And as I learned in my piece, they slept in a family bed for many years up until Phineas was like 10 years old. And then he was like, I need that other room, guys. So this is a very tight-knit family.
Can I get vulnerable for a moment?
This is a very small house. Did you sleep in a family bed?
No, but can I get vulnerable for a moment? My parents did the same thing that their parents did, which is when I got old enough to have my own bedroom, they gave up their bedroom and they slept in like... quasi the living room. They put up a screen between there and like where the TV was, but effectively they moved into the living room so that I can have my own bedroom.
This
I'm crying
podcast.
For your sliding doors pop star path. What could have happened?
I didn't have Tony Bennett vocal lessons, though, I'll tell you that. So Megan, it exploded your preconceived notion about the secret wealth of the O'Connell clan. What is the aesthetic like? Like, what's the color schemes?
I don't know, like oil paintings everywhere.
Everything and, like, everywhere, little, right? Arts and crafts everywhere.
Arts and crafts everywhere. There's like a ukulele on the floor. And then there's like a drawing
the
that
one
Billy
from Old Town
made
Road?
When she was six. Oh, God. But yeah, I mean, it's like the childhood. It's like the dream of like a creatively nurtured childhood is there. There's a trapeze rig in the backyard, and there's
what?
A treehouse.
Yeah, the mom.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then, all right, this is another telling detail for me. This is the kind of house where the childhood friend comes over, spends the whole day, and stays when the kids leave. You know what I mean? So she had a friend there who was like hanging out with her family,
right,
whose height is literally written on the wall, like next to hers, you know? And then when Billy left to go to a party, like the friend just hung out like with the parents and the dog and the cat and the clothes and the publicist. And, you know, it's like, it's a womb. It's a womb.
Sure.
After Billy left, her parents insisted on taking me to the playhouse in the back that the dad had built. So the dad is a carpenter. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about this. He was an actor as well, but then basically started flipping houses, lost a bunch of money flipping houses around the recession. And Billy said, you know, I get to keep my parents in their house, basically, based on my career. So they walk me to the back, to this little playroom that she used to have that the dad built in the backyard. And it's just covered in, like, free stuff, designer clothes, shoes, you know, basically the spoils of being Billie Eilish now, as is the rest of the house. There's just, you know, everything described. I think it was already probably a cluttered arts and crafts style house, but now there's, like, an extra layer of free designer stuff on top.
Right.
And so that little playhouse is completely packed wall to wall with clothes. And I was like, oh, well, now Billie's super successful. Like, she's going to buy you guys a house. And the parents were like, no, no way. We're not leaving here. She just needs to buy a house for all of her stuff.
Me too.
Yeah.
Who can relate?
So I thought that was telling in a certain way. You know, like I believe them. I don't think they're leaving that house.
So, and also one of the things that comes through in both of your profiles is to pick up on this theme is the humbleness of the situation. And also that the family purity, the family is vegan. Billie is, to the best we know, relatively straight edge. Like, she's
17.
I mean,
yeah, she's 17.
Wait, are you saying
she's homeschooled 17?
But I'm saying, are you saying she's 17 like she's doing some stuff that we don't know about? Or are you saying she's 17 like she'll grow out of it?
Both.
Okay. At the moment, though, let's listen to Zanny.
To feel better.
So that was Zanny, just a chill, fun pop song about not doing prescription drugs.
With some blown out bass.
Absolutely. It's like SoundCloud rap, but without the rap and without the SoundCloud.
And without the drugs.
There you go.
Without the drugs. Yeah. So what is that?
Right. Exactly. So there is this interesting. So Megan, one of the things we were talking about before you called in was this kind of, to my ear, there's like a little bit of basicness, straightforwardness, kind of like old-fashionedness to the Billie Eilish project, musically, not aesthetically, but musically. And so it's interesting because Zanny is a song where, like, actually it's like sort of a little bit of a fuddy-duddy sentiment.
And it's a very, look, don't do musically.
Drugs. Kids, don't do drugs. Right.
And musically, it's a very strange song. Almost nothing is going on except these sort of weird, like, flubs of bass and like the vocals cut, and there's almost no instrumentation, and it's a very simple sort of lullaby melody, and then there's and stressed up in this way that we've been discussing.
Lullaby melody is interesting because, like, I feel like there's like a very like twee element to this song and even to her album in general. Like, there's like some like indie girl cabaret, like Regina Spektor energy.
Yes.
Yeah, there's that ukulele song, and it's the same thing we've been discussing. It's this pretty straightforward ukulele song. It's called Eight. I believe.
Yes.
And then they just pitch up her vocals, so it becomes a much weirder song than it would have been otherwise.
Which is immediately followed by a song where she samples a bunch of stuff from The Office.
Right, which is how you know she's a teen, because The Office is the Bible.
Oh, it's not funny.
Wow, you got a lot of hot takes from this podcast. And I say that as somebody who stopped watching The Office in season 2 or 3.
So when you guys were talking to her about her songwriting, with this in mind, when you were talking to her about songwriting, where does the songwriting or song creation pivot from this kind of conventional, familiar structure accessible melodies, whatever, into the kind of like dental drill, like where's the transition? Where does it start, and then where does it end up?
The thing is, I find their process, their songwriting process, really interesting and cool and like truly DIY. I mean, like, Joe, I watched your video and it's like, yeah, they're sampling like Easy Bake Ovens. And I think that's really cool, and especially really cool when it turns into like the number one album in the country. But like, it's almost like the sum of its parts does not add up to like the interestingness of the pieces.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think that's ultimately the interesting tension, right? Because, like, none of us would dispute that Billie Eilish is, like, kind of a fascinating character. But a thing that I know that I personally have struggled with the songs, going back to the EP and before, is I do not find the songs fascinating.
And this brings us to an interesting crossroads, which is something that was, like, a mini little conversation on Twitter, which was somebody saying, these Billie Eilish songs aren't for you guys, like...
Right.
Like, leave it alone, which, of course, as people who talk about teenagers for a living, we don't agree with that. But, you know,
Joe Coscarelli, don't at me.
Obviously, she's not immune to criticism, to music and cultural criticism. We should be talking about her because she is famous and soon to be wealthy.
Yes.
And influential.
Like Bernie Sanders.
Right. But I think it's like you can think of it from this other perspective, which is these are a couple of kids playing around in their parents' room, making this thing that got huge. Mm-hmm. And when other kids hear it, they're like, damn, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And if we can't see that because we're no longer Peter Pan or whatever, mm-hmm. that's fine. But obviously it's connecting on an insane level.
Of course. No, I don't think it's a question of not seeing it. To me, it's really like... I've been thinking a lot about lineage with her, and obviously, like, one of the kind of gut level things that you want to do with her is you want to be like, oh, is it Halsey? Is it Lorde? Is it whatever? But like, to me, I'm like, oh no, is it Katy Perry?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's honest. And I know that's a shot, but it does feel that way. It feels like it comes from a much more conventional access. Like, I don't feel like the musical choices are as eccentric as a Lorde. I don't know if the angst is maybe as pure as a Halsey. I don't know. Again, I'm going to get a lot of emails about this, but like, this is the thing that I find myself time and time again wondering when I'm listening to Billie Eilish music, which is maybe it's just that it hasn't landed where it's going to land.
That's the other
thing.
We're
still seeing it in progress.
Again, I'll repeat, like, this is a homeschooled 17-year-old who only makes music with her older brother. Like, that's a pretty limited worldview for now.
Sure.
Right. I also think, remember that time maybe like 3 or 4 years ago when all the like post Disney Channel pop star girls started singing in like the indie girl voice,
the whisper,
I guess, or like Halsey core, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I feel like this is almost like a full circle moment for that phenomenon, where it's like maybe every generation gets the like twee indie girl, like manic pixie dream girl, like Coco Rosie that they deserve.
Wow. I wish that Billie Eilish had heard Coco Rosie, because it makes a lot of sense.
Didn't Coco Rosie have a song where they said the N-word?
Yes.
Wow.
Oh,
canceled.
Okay.
Don't do that.
Yeah, and it's like,
don't do that. Kids, don't do that. Don't do drugs.
Don't do Xanax. Don't be like Coco Rosie. But like, if every generation gets their like Regina Spektor or like Coco Rosie moment, I'll take Billie Eilish over the one that like us millennials have.
Right. We I think John and I wrote this on a whiteboard recently, but Selena Gomez plus Halloween equals Billie Eilish.
Exactly.
I also just want to say, I profiled Regina Spektor for New York Magazine like 2004, and she was lovely.
She's a nice woman, nice
very,
songwriter.
Very lovely. Yeah. Just want to throw that out there.
My mom's favorite.
Oh!
No, literally, my mom loves Regina Spektor.
Again, she can never do what Sarah Bareilles does.
let's get away from that.
So, Megan, what else did you learn in the Eilish household that you took home with you and still are haunted by to this day?
Oh, haunted by. Well, actually, I felt kind of like out creative because her mother, bless her heart, like a wonderful woman, Maggie.
Oh, man. Shout out to Maggie.
Me,
Maggie seemed great on the video.
She's amazing.
She's so cool and very welcoming. I mean, for like a whole crew of people to be in her little home. But like, she invited me to no less than like 17 like artistic events in the Los Angeles era.
Nice.
And she was like, oh, well, like Phoebe Bridgers is playing here tonight.
We talked about this.
Yeah, you simply must go see like this improv troupe that's playing later tonight. Please go and let me know what you think of it. And I was like, I think I'm going to like drink 4 beers and pass out at 9:30. But like, thank you so much.
That's Billie Eilish album 4.
Yes. When Billie Eilish discovers alcohol, as Taylor Swift did. I think the family stuff, like, I feel like we've danced around it a bit, but this has really become, as I wrote in my piece, like a family business in this way that I think ultimately really benefits Billie and Phineas. So the other thing is like the dad, right? So he's a handyman. Now he's working on the tour crew. You know, he became the lighting director. He like helps build the set. And like in the backyard, you see this red ladder and it's from the cover of her EP. Mm-hmm. And the dad was like, at some point her manager called me and was like, hey, are you building that red ladder? And he was like, what red ladder? And the manager was like, you better talk to your daughter. So like she comes up with these ideas and her family helps
this is very,
make it happen.
Is there a hot trend piece? Because when I did that Rat Boy's father was also a fabricator.
DIY dads.
And he made all the stuff for the Rat Boy videos and for the album cover.
Yeah.
Wait, DIY dads. That's a hot fashion shoot. Should someone, someone who can do hot fashion shoots, DIY dads. just throwing that out there. It's a free idea. There is something about this insularity that could be a little bit off.
Sure.
So let's play a song that kind of attracted a little bit of negative attention. Let's play Wish You Were Gay.
It's a banger.
It is.
I just wanna make you feel okay. But all you do is look the other way. I can tell I wish I didn't want to stay. I just kind of wish you were gay. Is there a reason we're not through? Is there a 12 step just for you? Our conversations all in blue. 11 hates. 10 fingers tearing out my hair. 9 times you never made it there.
This is a very good song that I'm kind of surprised. I mean, it definitely got negative attention. I'm surprised it didn't get more negative attention.
So what is offensive about it?
It's
juvenile.
It's not so much that the use is offensive. It's more in the year of our Lord 2019. I feel like it can be read in multiple ways. And I think things that encourage multiple readings, some potentially insensitive, are generally washed out of this, are cleansed out of the system when there's a bigger system in place.
Totally.
And it seems unusual to see a song with this title. And obviously the subject matter is not exactly controversial necessarily, but it just seems odd to see this coming on like an Interscope record.
I agree. And when I saw the song title before I listened to it, when I got the demos of the album or whatever, I thought it, because Billie is not, she's a 17-year-old girl. She's not open about her sexuality, nor does she need to be, really. But I thought
you mean public.
Publicly. Yes. Yeah. But I thought it was going to be about same-sex attraction.
Yes.
And
totally.
Saying,
I thought the same thing.
And saying, I wish
like
that.
Like break up with your girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly. Which, again, that to me is probably a more offensive song than this. But we can
also
talk about
banger,
that.
Though.
Also a banger. But it's not. So the song is like, you don't like me. I wish the reason you didn't like me is because you weren't interested in my gender, basically.
Right.
Which, you know, she says that the person she wrote the song about turned out to be gay, which is, I don't know if it's true or not. It's funny. And she said that she changed some lyrics in the song she anticipated maybe, you know, she thought that they were in the clear, basically. And I would say it got a fake backlash.
Not a Rita Ora backlash.
It got the backlash that you're talking about, which is like, are people mad about this? Dot, 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 question mark. You know, I don't know. Megan, what's your read on the song?
I mean, I'm just like not personally not super interested in like woke shaming a 17-year-old, mm-hmm. you know? Like, I don't know, man. I think that's one that you just chalk up to like, she's going to figure why that's like sort of on the bottom of like the problematic scale at some point.
Yeah.
To pick up the sort of woke shaming thing, I mean, I think, Joe, this came up in your piece. The X stuff came mm-hmm. up in your piece.
Yeah, talk about X.
Yeah, so, you know, she is someone who was a big fan of XXXTentacion, who obviously had some very problematic things that happened
right.
in his personal life, accused of domestic violence, yeah. and but still an iconic figure, certainly for her
to
age
people of
group,
that generation, and
absolutely
and
iconic
and
figure.
World.
And she said something to your in your piece. You want to talk about how she addressed you bringing up her fandom?
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't happy, Megan. I don't know if you asked her about it, but
I pointedly did not because I just wasn't ready for that conversation.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I felt like I had to bring it up. I kept sort of thinking about how I was going to bring it up. You know, this is a young woman who has an extremely impressionable and intensive female fan base. Yeah. Young girls look up to her. So that's sort of how I framed it. The other way I sort of got into it was saying, you know, you've been very lucky for being as viral and as famous on the internet as you've been up to this point. She hasn't had a lot of controversy. She had a little bit with this Wish You Were Gay thing, mm-hmm. which was like barely mm-hmm. a blip. And she had a little bit with X stuff, which was also barely a blip. So I mm-hmm. asked her about that. I was like, were you surprised that you did not catch more flack for being friends with XXXTentacion? Yeah. And for, you know, after his death, she played a song she had written titled after, you know, the day he died. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible, I didn't get this straight from her, I think it's possible Bury a Friend is partially about him because they wrote it the month after he was killed,
yeah.
you know, and there's other mentions on the album of having to bury friends, which isn't something that a lot of homeschooled white 17-year-old girls, I would say, have done yeah. or have had to do or sing about. And, you know, she was pretty upset that I asked.
Yeah,
and
you sort of described in your piece as one of the few moments where she seemed uncomfortable.
Yeah, and, you know, she sort of, like, looked around. You know, this is a small house. People are going about their business. Her mom's cooking. Mm-hmm. The mom calls for the publicist, like, sort of jokingly, but not. The publicist, you know, says her thing. Billy, to her credit, wasn't really fazed by the sort of backup stuff, but she was like, look, I don't think that I should be punished for mourning someone. Like, I lost someone who meant something to me died, and like all I can do is like be honest about my feelings and my connection to that person. Yeah. You know, I said, fair enough. I'm not there to
sit in judgment,
to police her, or to sit in judgment. And plenty of people have mourned, all the most famous rappers in the world have mourned XXXTentacion and have not really been asked about it, yeah. With the exception of maybe like J. Cole, so mm-hmm. who has been asked about it and said he didn't care, basically. So, you know, they had a relationship. She said, you know, that he had helped her sort of along the path of fame and had been there for her, text, FaceTime. I don't know if they had a real life relationship, but you know that I
don't think she posted DMs with him when he passed, unlike many others.
Oh, she posted a text from him.
Okay, sorry. You can take that.
She posted a text.
I'm trying to give her a little credit.
Yeah, we'll no. I mean, look, she's again. This is a kid. This is how she related to this other young artist who, you know, they share a lot of fans.
I don't really have a framework for how much a 17-year-old is supposed to. How much are they supposed to take on in terms of these things? Is this an issue that older fans of hers are sort of like project? Of course we're not projecting like the problem of this.
No, but our frameworks and conversations that we are privy to are just fundamentally different than a 17-year-old.
And I think, I mean, even beyond like XXX, I think there's a lot of ways that like writers of our age or older approach the Billie Eilish phenomenon or other like young, super famous people that came up off the internet with a lens that's like makes sense to old people, but not to her actual fans. And again, like maybe this is all just shirking the responsibility of like, I don't want to go into someone's parents' house and say, hey, like, why do you like this abusive guy who died? But and then I'm just like, I'm not sure her fans even care.
I think that's true. And I was using it as this sort of moment, which if she continues to be as famous as she is at the moment, this stuff is going to happen more and more
often. Of course,
often.
It's going to come up.
People throw stuff at you and you either dodge it or you catch it and you throw it back. Yeah. And I think it's very telling how smooth her ride has been thus far. And I think a lot of it comes from, yeah, this sort of protective bubble that she came up in and has come with. And, you know, it helps that the product is very advanced. And even though they're doing it themselves, it sounds super professional and nobody's really futzing with it. But I think as she enters this Europe household name pop star status, like the anxieties become more and the critics become more and the fake controversies become more and the fake news stories about you know, the blog chatter, you know, there was a piece in The Sun recently. I don't know if you guys saw this. That was like Billie Eilish, like darkness underneath the like pop girl persona, you know, basically
so she is British,
basically implying that, you know, the whatever sort of goth stuff in her music was actually a real representation of her spiraling into drug addiction. I don't know. I can only speak for what I saw across, you know, two different days with her family and a couple of FaceTime calls. It didn't seem, I wasn't worried.
There's something dispositionally really interesting about how she carries herself. There's a, I don't want to say gravity because that sounds negative and dark. There's a maturity and a kind of certainty. I think we're used to really any pop star, not just a 16 or 17 year old, but even a 25 year old. There's like a wishy-washiness you kind of are used to. But there's nothing wishy-washy at all about Billie Eilish, certainly in none of the interviews I've watched. Or it seems like a really high level of focus and confidence in the creative person that she is. And that's something that I think small micro controversies like this are not going to derail a person like that. They might derail a person who's less certain.
Totally. And I think that's the stuff that's by design. You know, her parents said to me flat out, we never wanted our kids to go to college. We wanted them to do whatever they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And when you're raised in that sort of millennial, safe, post-millennial, what is she now? Gen double Z?
Yeah,
like, I don't even know.
Gen A. Gen A was starting over.
And you're just told, follow your passions. Do whatever you want. We're gonna back you. We're gonna believe in you. Like, and usually that stuff comes with money, but not always. And in this case, I think it just, like, the love and support she's gotten. You know, and she sort of has this tomboy energy. You know, this comes back to the presentation. She's always in these big baggy clothes.
Yeah, what was she wearing? Megan, what was she wearing? let's get into the fashion police for part of the podcast. What was she wearing?
The best way I could describe it is how I described it in the piece.
Oh, right. You had a good description. Yeah.
So, you know, Jigsaw from Saw, like the weird little puppet clown murder guy. Like, if he was like a huge fan of like Smoke Perp and like Ski Mask the Slump God and was going to like Rolling Loud. Like,
but also shopped at Hot Topic.
Yeah, like.
Yeah, but also that.
Was like Anime Raver in your piece? It was in one of your pieces.
Definitely. She's,
And there's an element of Parappa the Rapper.
Woo!
I think that made your piece because I remember thinking, oh, I haven't thought about that in a long time.
She's also like this like stunningly beautiful girl too, which like her fashion sort of like obscures the fact that she is like this like supermodel gorgeous girl. I don't really want to like think too hard about why a 17-year-old girl dresses the way she does. Maybe she just feels like it and that's like awesome. But then I wonder if part of it is like looking at how, you know, unfortunately, a really good way to get people to focus on your art as a woman is to like cover yourself up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's like a strategy or if it's just like, this is how I dress because I listen to SoundCloud rap and I'm so.
Yeah, I think it's all of that. I think they're conscious, at least as a sort of business, you know, Billie Eilish is a business in addition to being a teenager. And her manager said to me flat out, he said, you know, if you think of another 17-year-old, like Britney Spears was 17 when she was on the cover of Rolling Stone, like lying on the teddy bears in a bra, you know? And then you just look at Billie Eilish's Instagram and it's like the complete polar opposite. Mm-hmm. And like, it's not, I think it comes from her organically. I don't think there's like a team of suits saying, Billie, you wear this. but I think like, it's also not totally accidental.
Why have you just described the job I aspire to have later in life?
Well, when I was first asked if I wanted to write about Billie Eilish, I mean, at first, I had to like do a lot of research because I was like, honestly, I like don't really know anything about her. But when I saw her Instagram, I kind of like made the fairly cynical assumption that like some sort of evil genius at Interscope had been like, you know, step one, take this like precocious choir girl. Step two, dress her like a SoundCloud rapper. Ah! Step three, profit, you know?
Wait, first and, like, of all, is anyone at Interscope that smart?
That's the question.
Oh, all our friends at Interscope who are listening, I don't mean to cast aspersions on your gifts, but you know, someone should be that smart.
You know, that is my idea whose time has come for better or worse. But it's, and so that's kind of was my assumption.
No,
that was her.
And she just showed up on their doorstep like this, mm-hmm. and everyone was like, awesome. WTF, thank like, you. Let's go.
And also, thank you.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, I think the kids know what they want and they know what other kids want. And when you build a good team around it, that's when it works. And then people call you an industry plant.
Megan, before we go, where do you envision the Eilish thing going? Like, what do you think the direction is? Does it stay? Because even though she has the number one album in the country, I would by no means describe her as like a centrist pop figure. Not yet.
But it's moving in that direction.
Do you think, Megan, do you think it's moving in that direction? Or do you think she's going to remain kind of like quasi-subcultural? Do you think the songs are going to get more eccentric? What energy did you leave with as far as the future goes?
I don't even know if there's a way to like remain subcultural in 2019 and beyond. True. You know what I mean? True. Like, what are our subcultures? It's kind of like your super
country rap. And,
yeah. Okay. You're right.
Rap, not Lil Nas X.
Listen, 2 months ago when I filed this story, Billy had 12 million Instagram followers, and I checked yesterday, and it's somewhere in the realm of 18. I mean, I'm not going to embarrass myself and, like, do that math real quick, but, like, that's a pretty big jump.
couple million.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, she's going to be huge. Now, is she going to go the realm of, like, Grimes and in 4 years be making, like, authoritarian, like, fiber goth?
New metal.
Paperweight. Yeah, like, perhaps. Like, might I be down for that more so than, like, what she's got going on now? Sure. Like,
I think she could make that turn? Sure. Do I think the industry is going to let her? No. I think they've got her arms around her. She's going to be nominated for Best New Artist. Could be nominated for Album of the Year on top of that. You know what I mean? I think, like, she's a unicorn. I called her that in my piece. Like, just from a business, like, I thought about this story as half a business story and half a, you know, who is this person profile. And, like, on the business side, like, they don't see a ceiling, you know? It's just she could be Ariana Grande if the kids are ready for baggy clothes on Ariana Grande.
Right. And on Ariana Grande, who would never refer to herself as Ariana did at Coachella as Thadiana Grande. Megan, thank you for calling in. So grateful to have you today. We will catch up with you soon.
Well, thanks for having me. I can't wait to tell all my extended family members that don't think I have a real job that I've been co-signed by the New York Times.
That's right. Popcast is for the family. See, here's the thing. I like to say Popcast. I think pop fans and pop, like, people think that it's for them. It's not. It's for your family members who don't think that what you're into is legitimate. Play them this exact moment. Literally fast forward to this moment and play it to them and be like, mom, dad, uncle, aunt, cousin, brother, sister, what I care about is real.
And then show them a Billie Eilish video and see who their heads explode.
Speaking of exploding heads, let's play just a pure slapper from the Billie Eilish record as we go out. Let's play You Should See Me in a Crown.
This is one of my least favorites.
Okay, well then what do you want to hear?
No, play it. I think it's interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think this bangs?
I think it bangs, but it's in the most straightforward way.
In that Tony Bennett way?
No, in that like EDM becomes pop way.
Right, in a future Chainsmokers, Billie Eilish, Tony Bennett collaboration way.
Sure.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
Yes, let's listen to it. Visions I vandalize, cold in my kingdom size, fell for these ocean eyes. You should see me in a crowd. I'm gonna run, there's nothing to hell. Watch me make them bow. One by, one by. One by, one by, you should see me in. That is our show about future Tony Bennett duet partner Billie Eilish. Thank you to Joe Coscarelli and Megan Garvey. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast, which includes at least two or three previous examples of Billie Eilish skepticism if you would like to get a full macro narrative on the Billie Eilish phenomenon. Email us, especially if you are a teenager who thinks that we are full of it. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com, subject heading U letter R letter full of it, and I will be sure to read that note and
side
take it to
note,
heart.
Teens do not listen to podcasts.
But New York Magazine told me they do. So
all right,
weird.
Prove me wrong, no, teens. Hit the email.
Yeah, seriously. You should all... And no, just at Joe Coscarelli.
On TikTok.
Yeah. I can't wait till the TikTok podcast. Oh, that's going to be wild. Subscribe to the podcast. That is a thing you should do everywhere you get your audio content. Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, yada, 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 yada. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We'll be back next week. Your silence is my favorite sound. Watch me make them bow.